Blog Talk Radio.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant, and I still loving you. I'm walking down
Hatter, and then put to music and sung by Shout Even Shy. And it's become a favorite around here. It's an amazing song, and I hope you all liked it. This is Deborah Lee, and you're listening to A Team of Voices Radio. We are a writing group, chat group, radio group that hangs out at allpoetry.com, which is a huge poetry site that you can join for free. And if you join or are already a member, you can find us on the Groups tab under A Team of Voices, and I'll meet you at the door. If you're in earshot and would like to call in, that number is 1-646-668-2837. Again, 1-646-668-2837. And if you're in the chat room, you can click on the poem links as we present them on the show and follow along. If you call in, you can read, you can comment, and we'd love to hear from you. And my co-host, Big Brother Hatter, is running late, probably trying to finish his poem. But let's say hello to some of the people in the studio, like Raconteur, who was waiting for me when I got here. Hey, Rack.
Hey, Debs. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. How you doing?
Huh? Keeping dry.
We got lucky. We only had about 2 minutes, so I guess we'll see. And right behind Raconteur is the dynamic duo, the owner of A Poetic Slice of Life, Kay, and her amazing husband, Stephen 76. Hello, you two.
Hello.
Hello.
Glad you are here. And then right behind our dynamic duo is none other than Mr. David Prophet. Hey, David, welcome to the show. If the button went, there it goes. Hello, Dave. It was spinning and spinning.
Yep, I'm here. Hello, Deborah.
If you feel that warm breath right behind you, that's my sweet, one of my amazing board members out of Team of Voices. Hello, doll.
Hello, darling.
So glad you and everyone are here. And since I happen to know that Kay and Stephen just finished their own show, I'm going right over to the board, and I am getting Kay's poem, and I am going to have her kick us off with her brilliance right about now. There you go. I have a quick question for Rack, though. Rack and Thor, do you have a poem title that I can go get and pull a sound clip from, or are you working on that?
I don't know. I haven't done audios for some of the more recent stuff, but I have some of it memorized that I could recite it from memory. That depends on the mood.
Give it some thought while I have the duo do their reads and stuff, and then I will bug you again. How's that sound?
Fair enough.
Cool. Okay. So, Miss Kay, who just finished a birthday weekend, would you take us away, please?
Yes. I call us ice crystals breaking the drought. Haze of ice on the wings, wintergreens through cinnamon featherings. Mountain smoke of eucalyptus, cherries of bloodstream bonfires looking for breath. And the brush of the tillows, bubble days carefree, teased and curled, ribboned and purpleasing eye, strawberry sensations groomed, a purr upon antiquated threads of beige to plume, and hollyhocks to garden the dream. To the maiden of the house who sovels her suitor, latitudes parallel and not a willow-wall. This perilous night through the mist, she longs for snow greens, he offering the balm of cool through a pelting season. And poems.
Well, I love the title, Ice Crystals Breaking the Drought. Really, really visual, because you can think of how they would melt really quick if it's warm, and usually it is when there's a drought, so that those ice crystals could make a big difference, especially in Texas and California today. But I love the combo here with the two photos, because, like, down at the bottom, well, I guess it's sort of more middle-ish. In the brush of the tillows, bubble days, carefree. I love bubble days. There's just something so sigh-worthy about it. And when you look at the photo, you could actually almost imagine her sighing as she sunk into the bubbles. And, it, you know, the cat's there and the rubber ducky's there and the bubbles are floating up. So bubble days, carefree, teased and curled, ribboned in her, in purr-pleasing eye, strawberry sensations, groomed. I love that. And a purr upon antiquated threads of beige to plum and hollyhocks to garden. The dream is the maiden of the house. I love the maiden of the house. And that's the maiden of the house there in that bubble bath with her trusted little kitty holding that back scrubbing brush. So I love how this came out, and I also love the art that's in between, or that, you know, that's in between the wording and stuff. All three of them are really awesome, so it's a bang up job of combining them, because I can get with what you wrote and blend it with any of them. So bravo. Great share.
Thank you.
And let's see. How about – go to David, please.
Well, this was just amazing. I really – but all the casework is amazing to me. I, too, agree with what you said about the title, Deb, Ice Crystals Breaking the Drought. That's pretty descriptive, you know. We've been having a lot of hot weather up here in Oregon. Today it was like 95 outside, I think. It's been that way for the past week and a half. But I really like the second picture there, and I have to agree with everything you said about that too. I don't take bubble baths, but it's really nice to read about it. Because it does convey a sense of sereneness and. Or sense of the serene and relaxation and just, you know, unwinding, I guess. And then is the maiden of the house who sozzles her suitor, latitudes parallel in not a willa walla, whatever that is. Willa walla, okay, I don't know. Anyway, I'll be quiet. I really like this, Kay. I thought you did a really good job on it. But then I like most of your stuff. But this one was really cool. Really cool.
Thank you.
Fabulous comment. How about you, Raconteur?
Oh, this is lovely. I mean, it makes me want to take a bubble bath, but I don't know that I'd be able to until you got out, you know? And that'd be a totally different poem, huh? There's a sense of serenity about it that again would change drastically if my thought continued on. But I love the idea of in the midst of all this too, that the cat's still lurking around, the cat's lurking, because they tend to be like on the fringes and always checking out what's going on. So that ever present feature that's just there, whether you realize it or not, that kind of added to it. But the overall feeling of chilling out, literally chilling out and relaxing, to getting out of the weather. The only thing missing is like a cup of hot coffee or a glass of wine. I mean, or cocoa rather, or wine. It just feels really just very downtime-ish and unwindy. Lovely, lovely piece.
Thank you.
Great comment. And before I get the next comment, let's say hey to Hatter. Hi, Hatter.
Unmuted.
Hey, Hatter.
Hey, hey.
Glad you came. Starting to get worried.
I knew you.
Let me get a comment from Sweet for Kay, please.
Well, first, I love the pictures. I think that's gorgeous. But I am going to talk, focus my attention on the very first few words of this poem, because I just want to take the thought of taking a very deep breath and just enjoying this moment in this life. But a haze of ice in the wings of wintergreen. Now, if you take a moment and just think of the crisp coolness of ice, and then you think of wintergreen and the smell of wintergreen, that just cool wintergreen, and then you go through cinnamon featherings. I mean, just the tint of cinnamon in something is always bright and crisp, and it's got that snap to it. And then the mountain smoke of eucalyptus. Now, eucalyptus clears everything, and it's got that tingling sensation. So I've got ice, wintergreen, cinnamon, eucalyptus, cherries, the bloodstream bonfires looking for breath. So it's got that heat in it, that hot heat. So there's so much going on in that very first stanza that I was just so overwhelmed. I think there's just so much you've got going on, and it's all pretty in words and everything like that, but I was just like, wow, what a breath that you just took in that first stanza. And I think it's a piece of brilliant writing for a simple breath.
Thank you.
very
fantastic comment.
Good at that.
The women.
And Hatter, I don't know if you got to hear it. When did you get here?
I didn't hear what was read. No.
Okay, I didn't think so, but I just wanted to check real quick. But I know that Stephen heard. So how about if you comment and then read for us, please?
Yeah. Well, you read this to me a while ago too, so I do like it. Well, 4 days ago, and I said in my comment, not only do I get sozzled by just looking at you, but I am also glad that I am the one that helps get through these hot and dry summers. Yeah, I like all the paintings and pictures that you put in this too, because it definitely reminds me of us and reminds me of home, and I think that's where you went.
Yeah.
And I like the use of the silly words. Very well done.
Yeah, thank you.
Fantastic comment. And if you see yours, take us away.
All right. I like this picture that I was fortunate to get because it took me back to my youth. And that's why I call this Colored Finger Sandwiches Still Dance in My Memory. Tight dressed in linen's white, hot cross wafer received first rite, blood family gathering of Mosaic gifts, usher in the dining room where spirits lift. Upon wood buffet to child's delight, salad finger sandwiches colored pastel light, olive pickle radish onion condiment tray, Puritan white frosted cake on special day. Checks and bonds pile in tiny palm, statues engraved with parts of well-known psalm. Bamboozled thoughts drift through youngling mind. No games inside wrapping paper will he find. But grandparents hug, aunts pinch cheeks, uncle's hogwash curse of freckled Sikhs. Parents proud of their growing boy, still digging through the gift wrapping, but never finding toys. End poem.
Wow. Well, you know, Stephen, for starters, I have to say that I love that the photo took you on a journey back to your childhood. That is cool by itself. And I love the title, Colored Finger Sandwiches Still Dance in My Memory. Way cool title. Let's see. I could really go anywhere, but upon the wood buffet to child's delight, salad finger sandwiches colored pastel light, olive pickle radish, onion condiment tray, Puritan white frosted cake on a special day. And those frosted white cakes are like a giant cupcake. There's something about that confectioner sugar, homemade, old-fashioned icing. And my mouth is watering thinking of that frosting. And then at the end there, yeah. But grandparents hug, aunt's pinched cheek, uncle's hogwash curse of freckled seed. Parents proud of their growing boy, still digging through the gift wrapping, but never finding toys. I'm sitting there and I'm thinking how you're trying to be like stoic, never finding toys. I think that this is fun and sentimental and vividly descriptive as far as making me want to grab a few things off that table to have with my coffee. But it's a really cool share. And I'll say it again, I love the fact that it took you back to childhood memories, which, I mean, if you can get a little time machine out of your prompt, that makes my day. So, fantastic share. Let me get you some comments. Hatter, what do you think?
Can you come back to me? I was stuck on my
timing. I can. How about if I see what Rack and Tour thought?
I love this nostalgia that, you know, it brought me back to many of my older, younger rather, the birthdays that I celebrate. That tray that you're describing with radishes and everything, easily picture all of that and you know, going through the picking up the package and it feeling like a pillow, like, oh, more socks. you went there and you know, it was very memorable because, you know, parents are practical and everything like that, and you're a growing boy That's why you're not getting toys, you know, that kind of a thought, you know, and even down to getting your cheeks pinched and everything else, that was all, you know, very, you know, I won't say cliche, but, you know, there's all elements of you know, at one time or another, you know, you had to have gone through all of that. So, you know, it was a lovely book down memory lane. It really was.
Thanks, Rick.
Awesome comment. And how about, oh, you know what? I beg your pardon. Let's say hello to Liquid Damage. Hey, Linda. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Deb. Thank you.
Hi,
good
Linda.
To be here. Hi, David.
Very glad you're here. And I have another 11111. And since Rockin' Tour's already here, we're going to have to see who we got down here. Hello, caller. Who am I speaking to?
Hey, it's WSB calling in from the grave.
Hey. Zombie boy,
hey.
Huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was active for a bit, then I was out for a few months. So it's like, oh, there you go. Coming back.
Oh, I noticed. I'm very glad you're back. Didn't realize it was from the dead, but hey, we'll take you how we get you. Just getting some comments for a poem that Stephen just read. So let me see what Dave thought, please.
Oh, I thought this was wonderful, and it reminded me of some of my childhood things. I never had any finger sandwiches, but boy, I sure had a lot of those white cakes. And you're right, the frosting on those things is just iridescent white, it seems like. It's pure white. There's no in-betweens on it. when I listened to Stephen read this, it started turning my time machine back on and wound me back up to when I was about 12, 13 years old, which is older than dirt. But I really like this. I thought you did a hell of a job on this, Stephen. Of course, like your wife, you're one of my favorite poets as well. So this doesn't come as a surprise, but it's a nice surprise, and it's nice to think about that and hear these poems read like that, and it's nice to know that people can still appreciate that stuff these days and still write about it. So well done.
Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome.
Fabulous comment. And how about my sweet?
Well, I really like it because it reminds me of my very English grandmother side, because I would have to absolutely learn how to serve a proper tea, and that's what that table reminds me of. So I totally get the little tea sandwiches and everything that had to go on, and definitely never presents in any of that. No toys, none of that. Just, you know, the proper way to make the tea, the proper tea sandwiches, and all of that. So not only did I have to make sure everything was proper and in its place, but I also had to serve. So I didn't just get the enjoyment of all of that. So I loved your poem because it definitely brings back those kind of Sunday brunches that you had with your family. I thought it was very well written, great descriptions, and got to share that memory. So thank you, Stephen. I appreciate it all.
Thank you, sweet. Appreciate it.
Fabulous comment. And I'm going to get Hatter a comment before he reads, but I thought you might want to tell us what's happening at A Poetic Slice of Life before that.
Actually, I think you'd probably be better at talking about the next show.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sorry. Yeah, so Wednesday at 9 o'clock is my write-in challenge that I did back in June. So anybody who gave me permission for that, we will get you read. That starts at 9 p.m. Eastern. So I guess what I have to say is, if anybody has an audio that they want to bring for that, let me know so I can get that in the studio. The topic of that theme is Silent Whispers, Nature's Echo. So, yeah, see you there.
Awesome. Thank you. And Hatter, can you please comment for Stephen now and read your poem?
Yeah, anything that brings you back nostalgic is great. My dad's side of the family is absolutely huge. There's 12 uncles and aunts, cousins up the, I think there's 52 total. So when we got together,
mm-hmm.
it was a, they increased the population of whatever town we're in. I mean, that was a big thing. But, when you first walked in, all the food, I mean, it wasn't one turkey. It was three turkeys. It wasn't one ham. It was five hams. I mean, it was absolutely huge. And great to, and for the longest time, my parents would let us open one present on Christmas Eve. We were all excited, I think, but it was always the shirt. And we finally caught on what it was. It was a god. It was the brightest Pendleton type of shirt. And they were all the same. So they could pick us out of the crowd. Basically, that's what it was. And,
I'll tell you a secret, Hatter. This was actually written to my first communion party, the celebration after my first communion. So there were no toys in the gifts. It was always religious gifts or bonds or money. There was no toys because it was a religious celebration. Yeah, so that's why there were no toys.
Yeah, I hear the Jewish faith is big on that. You become rich when you're a teenager.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah. He's thinking of the bar mitzvah. That's a bar mitzvah. He's stuck in communion.
Yeah, the bar mitzvah. But any of them, you got your, I guess uncles like to have a namesake. So if you're named after an uncle, he's basically going to leave you something. Anyway, great, great poem. Anything that brings back that kind of a memory, and it does.
Yeah. Thank you, Heather.
Awesome comments, everyone, and great poems, you too. Thank you very much. And how are your poems on the board?
Okay. Let me find it. Okay, there we go. Okay. I didn't get the picture on there. But I did. Okay. Well, that's where I guess we're stuck.
You were stuck.
Maybe I'm not a gold member anymore. And it's not letting me take
the you must be.
Out.
It says cloaked.
Holy crap. Okay. Nope, it's a picture of a monarch butterfly. It's called And Now It's Not a Lie. Yeah, I got you. Shoot. Can you put the picture up, Deb?
Absolutely.
Picture of a monarch. And Deb mentioned something about the monarchs 2 days ago, 3 days ago, and I was out in the by the tree, the fruit trees, and saw one monarch butterfly fluttered around, and sort of cool to see. And now it's not a lie. It goes like this. He wandered through the butterfly meadow carrying an oversized key he bought, kissing wings of colored bling. The key was too large for a metal lock. See what I did there? Place to pause to rest or not to ask him pleased what it was he bought. A key too large for any butterfly meadow lock door. The cost of such things unknown, but surely it was from a sacred store. Help the Hatter carry him home, tell him that he's not all alone. There is no door to free by key, no metal lock to find. Hear the Hatter as he shatters the coming of what's mine. The journey began from here to there in search of unknown words, an oversized key, so I set it free. Butterflies turned to birds. With metal breeches and purple stitches, monarchs pretend to die. Someone knew they would someone knew they would, someone knew they would come, and now it's not a lie. Clouds of bees would fly their best, the blood extra flew in royal dress. Each year they came, but not the same, the cloud grew less before our eyes. Sadness new and painted blue to hide the royal butterflies. Now they count on pointed fingers who to blame for things that die. Look at those that live in castles. Behind the walls is where they hide. Wow. And poems,
Heather, I
put along.
No, it's great. And you know, I almost only sent that one because I had a feeling that it would scream at you at this particular time. So, like, I'm really glad that you chose this one. And now it's not a lie, the monarch butterfly. He wandered through the butterfly meadow carrying an oversized tea he bought, kissing wings of colored bling, the tea too large for the meadow lock. I did like the play on words there. And, of course, you know, the how to rhyme and flow that we all talk about all the time is always so spot on. With stuff like the meadow breeches and purple stitches, monarchs pretend to die. Someone knew this would come, and now it's not a lie. To pretend to die, I wish they were just pretending. And for anyone who doesn't know, Hatter did one of his jukebox shows on Thursday night, and that's the same night that while we were on, or just as we were ending, across the ticker on the TV, they announced that they put the monarch butterflies on the endangered species list, which broke my heart and Hatter's heart. So I wasn't surprised at all that you chose this art. And for, like, the visuals are amazing because his art, it is a man standing there, and he's got a key, and he's got, like, the butterflies are flying around, and the cage is broken open, and he's, like, setting them free. And like, there's so many, and you don't get to see them in groups like that anymore. You're lucky enough if you see one or two. The picture actually reminds me of the fact that tonight there was a massive swarm of big dragonflies that were flying all over the backyard, and I couldn't capture them on my cell phone, so I was really bummed because I thought Kay would get a kick out of it. But anyway, the photo made me think of that visual, but the clouds of bees would fly their best, the monarchs flew in royal dress. I mean, all of it, the descriptions, the attention that you're calling to the butterflies, and the chance for me to say, boo-hoo, you know, there's got to be something we can do while they're still endangered before they're just gone, extinct. That I mean, I can't even imagine a child, a toddler, not getting to run across the field chasing butterflies. I mean, come on. So anyway, brilliant share, Hatter. I'm glad you chose that art.
Yeah, it was basically the migration through the Sacramento Valley that was disrupted and taken, because they do say the coastal migration still exists of the Western monarchs. They've got to make up their mind. So if you could still see them in the clouds, but not inland much, yeah, through the orchards. The orchards are gone. That's what they flew into. So thanks.
You're welcome. Oh, you know what? I'm sorry, Rat. Let me let Stephen and Kay comment because they probably want to go. Stephen?
Well, Kay had to step away, but I'll make a comment here. And I do have to apologize right off the bat because Hatter had to go here. Perhaps the problem is the old bitches. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
There's bitches pop up everywhere. Gee, sweet.
It made me think of the fact that when I'm on my way to work every day, I actually see one monarch butterfly near the state route that I have to turn onto to go to work. They have like this little dividing the left and right lane, there's this little patch of flowers on an island, and it's always flying around in there. So it is a shame that they're on the endangered list, and it makes me wonder, how do you save the butterflies? Anyway, it's an excellent matter.
Well, it would be great if everybody got milkweed, the weed, and grew it in the backyard. They're attracted to it, and they will. That's what they put. You know, put their crystal. What is it called? The pupa, no crystal.
Chrysalis.
I don't know. That's what they
especially
say to do.
Especially when it's as easy as writing to the. There's a company. If you Google free seeds for butterfly bushes. All you have to do is send an envelope with a stamp on it, and they'll send you back seeds to plant in your yard. And because of the repositioning of the weather patterns, it's messing them up. And before they get to certain spots that used to be warm to help them travel, it's already chilly there, or it hasn't got warm yet, and they're having to take different routes. And on those routes, they're not finding milkweed or the nectar they need to survive. So if we overrun the planet with milkweed, they'll find it. It's just got to be something there to find.
All right. I'll buy some.
Yeah, on the orchards. All the orchards that have been turned into tract homes and mini malls and stuff is gone. I witnessed it in my lifetime, how much it changed. But,
yeah. Thank you very much, Stephen. And your raconteur, what do you think?
God, this is beautiful, matter. You know, insect royalty, I want to say, you know. The minute I hear butterfly, the first thing that comes to mind is that black and orange, you know. And the fact that there's, you know, another butterfly that looks similar to that one, the viceroy, if I'm not mistaken, the two of them kind of play off of each other. One doesn't get eaten because it looks like the other one, and the other one is poisonous, if I'm not mistaken. But they're beautiful to look at, and you know, they were iconic. It's always like, you know, that was, you know, when I thought butterfly, that was what I grew up with. That was what I saw. You know, they were the little, you know, kind of nondescript butterflies of like one solid color that flew around. But that was the one that was like, you know, everyone was like, ooh, you know, because the other ones are just like, you know, eh, you know, okay, you know, it's almost boring. It's like, you know, it wasn't such a big deal. But when you saw the monarch, everyone was like, they got that hush, you know. It's just interesting to look at. And when you were talking about counting on the fingers, it made me think, you know, I don't know how well known a fact, you know, butterflies' taste buds are in their feet. So.
Yeah. Yeah,
anyway.
The clouds. I don't know if anybody has witnessed the clouds of butterflies as they would go up into the orchards. And I'm not kidding. They were absolutely huge and silent. They made no noise. It was sort of strange. And when they would go up into the orchards to when the migration, they would all gather together like a big, hanging nest hanging onto each other. Really cool.
Yeah.
Oh, and what's up with the yellow monarch? You just tripping along. There's yellow ones. There's actually yellow ones, like from mutation of the color. Yellow monarchs. Or they're impostors. Or they're impostors trying to make it. You know, I think maybe they are easier. Now, I don't know which one's poisonous. I think monarchs are, and the viceroy masked himself as one. I think that's it, but I'm not sure. But, yeah, I don't know about the yellow one. There's always some yellow ones.
You're right that the monarch is poisonous, but not to you or people. It's poisonous to another insect that might attack and bite it. That's why their colors are black and orange. They're warning colors.
Linda, what do you
think?
Oh, sorry.
Well, I thought this was beautiful, and it did bring back so many memories Every year, me and my girls, when they were little, would send away for the butterfly packet and plant them in the yard. And then my girls would be so delighted when a butterfly would come to the yard. And then in Idaho, way up in Idaho, there was a cloud that would come every year of monarch butterflies. And I disagree with Hatter. You can hear them in a cloud. And it sounds like it's when snow falls on snow, you know, that little tiny sound. That's what you hear. It's kind of like, yeah, when snowflakes fall, hit the snow. But I would be a little girl and be in one of these clouds, and they'd just engulf you. And they'd be all over the road, and I'd be all sad trying to pick them up off the road so the cars wouldn't hit them. But I really like this poem, Hatter. It just really brought back some good memories for me. And I think you wrote this well. And there's one part here. Oh, I can't find it now. Oh, with meadow britches and purple stitches, monarchs pretend to die. Somehow knew this would come, and now it's not a lie. It's so sad. But yeah, if everybody did plant those packets every year, I don't know about up here in Alaska, but I could try it. You know, you never know. We don't have a lot of kind of stuff like that. There's no snakes. There's no lizards. There's hardly any spiders. That's what I like best about Alaska, is there's no spiders. But, yeah, I could try planting some milkweed up here and see what happens. I have a huge yard. That would be great. And I have seen butterflies, so it's, you know, who knows. But, yeah, good job, Hatter.
Yeah, thank you. I do remember running up to the orchard and trying to put ourselves in the path of the butterflies. And I think twice I was enveloped by the cloud. It was just used to stand still, and it was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah,
that was a great comment. Thank you, Linda. And my sweet, will you comment for Hatter and then read for us?
Yes. Actually, I love you. You're freaking amazing. Your rhyme and your lesson this time just knocked my socks off. There are other ways to actually the monarch, not just with planting your milkweed and everything like that. The states have the monarch license plates now, if anyone is interested. A very good friend of mine has the Oklahoma First Monarch license plate. It says Monarch 1, and so you can always look into that. There are different organizations out there that do things, not only with the seeds and things like that, but I did want to mention that because I have a friend of mine who's absolutely obsessed with the Monarch Butterfly team. So her license plate is Monarch 1 with the Monarch Butterfly on it. So she has the first Oklahoma support of the butterfly, Monarch 1. Now that everybody knows her license plate number. I just think it's special, and we have to save everything, because if we lose bees and butterflies and all that, we lose us. So I love, you know, where you stand and the beauty of your mind and the beauty of your heart. My beautiful marshmallow man.
Thank you.
Fabulous comment.
Thank you. Do you want me to read now?
Yes, please.
I do, please.
Okay. So I loved my picture and my words were hoodwinked and bunghole. So those are very fun words. And I want to point out that bunghole means That is with a hole in a barrel or cask that you pour liquid through. It has nothing to do with Beavis and Butthead, so FYI. So this is called Mermaid Tales and Ever After Fails. A ship curtsied into the gentle waves of a rising tide, playing hide-and-seek in the shadows of the tangerine sunset, hanging pretty white bloomers with crossbones and skulls, scaring the sailors who sail for the queen and her and the cause. Memories of melodies and sunfish surfaced as the moon greeted the earth. She screamed to the sirens, "Bring your songs to me this cold and brutal night." And the evil ones cast their laughter at the girl with legs. The side rolled away the waves the mermaids hid. His anger brewed the storms the sea could not curtail. His daughter's tears salted the sea's palate with sadness. The sound of the conch shells reverberated her wails. A delicate ocean orchid spent her days conversing with the dolphins. A mermaid in kaleidoscope tail of color sat on boulders, talking botany, boys, and first kisses, when a prince hoodwinked her with words of ever after. "Daddy, please," she as fermented fruit poured from the bungholes of oak barrels. His daughter walked a plank over dry land, and a mighty god wept a tsunami through the bowels of Atlantis. His toothy grin and birchwood aftershave touching the smoothest of his mocha skin, an ache beyond the meaning of words, left her without malice or meaning. She sits watching the ship's bow to the ocean, begging a wench to return her to the sea. The earth is ice, and she stays lost until the day she is one with the water. End poem.
My, oh my. She really, really spoke to you. Mermaid Tales and Ever After Fails. Just the title, there's a sadness to the ever after fails that matches, because she could just be sitting there lost in contemplation and sad. A ship curtsied into the gentle waves of a rising tide. The opening line is breathtaking, my goodness. Playing hide and seek in the shadows of a tangerine sunset, hanging pretty white bloomers and crossbones and skulls, scaring the sailors who sail for her and a cause. Poseidon rolled away waves, and the mermaids hid their tails. His anger brewed the storm the sea could not curtail. I love the details in here. I mean, you just turned around and took this picture and gave it a story. He gave it a history. His toothy grin and birched wood aftershave, touching the smoothness of his mocha skin. I like how you brought in the sights and the sounds and the scent down to his aftershave smell. And I love your work, your use of the silly words. And on a side note for that, I thought it was just the whole that you threw sack things at, and it went in the bunghole. So I never thought it was what other people, well, what Beavis Butthead figured it was, but yeah. And I love the thought of the delicate ocean orchid spent her days conversing. The delicate ocean orchid. Sweet, you're the delicate ocean orchid. I love that metaphor. I think that this came out fantastic all the way through.
Well,
from the title to the feel to descriptions. Excellent.
Tip to tail.
Excellent piece.
Thank you. But I do have to say, you said it was a sadness, but your lyric you gave me was, "My spirit sleeping somewhere cold until you find it there and lead it back home." So that was the essence of the poem.
Aha. So you combined the prompts in a breathtaking manner, and I'm very impressed.
Thank you.
Let me to get you some comments, Doll. And I think I heard Hatter trying to say something. Did you want to go first, Hat?
You know, this is what I'm talking about. You can make a well. You can make a hole, a wishing well. I mean, you can make it deep. The storyline is so good. You get caught up. You get not caught up, but you get taken along with you. I want this to rhyme so bad. I want to take this and make it to rhyme.
I'm just so sorry.
Oh, it is. It is.
Not as the mermaid wants her fins back.
Yeah. Well, you can hear. You can hear that when that line comes up that should rhyme and then it doesn't. It's like, whoa.
So sorry, Hatter.
I don't know.
It's heartbreaking on so many levels.
It's the way I look at the world.
Thank you.
Awesome. And Raconteur?
There's a wonderful sense of heartbreak in this. The story about, you know, the mermaid that, you know, lost her tail to be with the boy comes out in this, you know, the emotion. That's what I latched on to more than anything. I mean, the story and the rest of it was wonderful, you know, dressing for that. But I think that's what carried the story for me, because that's, you know, the salting of the ocean with her tears is, you know, that speaks to me, you know, of the depth of the, no pun intended, of the emotion. You know, I mean, the whole thing centers around that deception. You know, she lost the thing that she loved the most, and it was for something that, you know, that promised something that was turned out to be a lie. So it was, you know, relatable on many levels and heartbreaking on many levels and beautiful on many levels.
Have you seen the video of the mermaid? They have a video of this, of whatever it is. It sits straight up on a rock. It's able to do that, and it can dive into the water without making a splash. And it's, so I don't know, they say it's not Photoshop, but it's got something. Mermaids. Are they?
Gotta wonder what was in the tea.
He was drinking straight from the bunghole.
I see the video.
Okay, boy.
Quite intriguing, because this thing, it moves like an animal, but it definitely has human features. I don't know. Didn't get Photoshop to me. If they were going to Photoshop something, it would have been better. You know, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
You'll have to share it, Hatter. But, okay, let's see if we can get a comment from WSP, please.
Yeah, sure. It's a wonderful poem, beautifully detailed. I pretty much took all of the best lines, Deb, so really hard to jump in. But,
that.
No, it's all good, because I was like, oh, I like this line. Oh, okay, well, but anyways, everything's great about it. One thing that I really liked, though, was that the world feels so colorful and fun and fresh, but the mermaid is really sad, and every time that we get closer to the mermaid, the world kind of gets a little bit sadder and darker, you know, and to me, that kind of made me think a lot of, like, you know, how, well, like, sometimes in, like, comedy movies or whatnot, you know, you'll see a sunny day, but then, like, a gloomy person sitting in a corner with, like, a little cloud over their head. But more than that, it makes me think of, like, you know, no matter how fun the environment might be, if you're having a bad time due to, you know, family stuff, your own personal issues, you know, the outlook is still very, you know, tough to go by. You know, it's very icy and cold. So that the poem made me think a lot about those kinds of, you know, juxtapositions, we'll say, you know. So I thought it was a really powerful piece.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Awesome comment. And Linda?
Yeah, sweet. This was so nice. You gave this piece life, and it was such an elegant piece. You know, the phrasings were so soft and elegant, and the imagery was so kind of surreal and kind of eerie but lovely. And it had a great story with heart and soul. And the picture was absolutely beautiful, and your writing so brought that out. But this third verse, Poseidon rolled away the waves, the mermaid's head, his anger bruised the storm the sea could not curtail, his daughter's tears salt the sea's palate with sadness, the sound of the conch shell reverberates for whales. That is just written so perfectly. I think you did a fabulous job with this. Thank you for sharing it.
Ah, I think that is high praise from you. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Awesome comment. And David, will you please comment and then read your poem for us?
Yeah. I love the melancholy tone of this and the sadness that Sweet wrote into it. It was beautifully handled, and her storytelling was superb with it. I really thought that I always like tales about mermaids and the sea and stuff. It's fantastic stuff to write about. And you really did this upright, Sweet. I think this was really great. One of my favorite stanzas in the poem is his toothy grin and birchwood aftershave. That's really a neat line. I would have never thought of anything like that. Touches the smoothness of his mocha skin, an ache beyond the meaning of words left her without malice or meaning. That's beautiful. The whole thing is gorgeous. I really, really like this. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, David. It means a lot to me.
Fantastic comments, everyone. Great poem, my Sweet. Thank you. And David, take us away.
Okay. Well, I didn't quite know what to do with this poem, the prompt, but I just went with it anyway. TUN 618 is the largest known black hole in the universe that we know of so far. So I kind of mixed up that with this character, and it's called The Music Inside TUN 618. I heard the music dying. I saw Satan laughing with delight the day the music died, round about the accretion disk of TUN 618, wavering in and out of view in its tortured space-time reality. I saw his face redshifted into eternity as part of it, pulled over the edge betwixt and between all those yesterdays, whence in slices of the past, twisted and distorted, animated horror show, its infinite gravity rattling the batter of space-time, his reflection wrapping up a dollop inside the ergosphere, frame-dragging, twisting those infernal features into pieces of yesterday. Just inside the photon sphere, TUN 618 does not mollycoddle nor play favorites, even with Satan. His recollections that once were now run up to high values of C, toasted in millions of degrees to those that believe, just a fading memory of their mistakes, guilty before God, guilty before the sun, guilty before all suns, guilty before mankind, guilty before time's line. All the music has not died, written on the walls, its notations inscribed, like the pyramid text upon the vortex walls inside of TUN 618. Information is never lost inside a black hole. The Dark Mother's quantum cookbook will not allow this. Her symmetry is perfection. It shall go on forever. David, my man, pay no heed to the one who calls himself Satan, for he is a plaything to me, nothing more. I throw him this way and that within the universe for amusement purposes only. 'Tis the voice of the Dark Mother whispering in my ear, her silken words of butterscotch and her blue shifted cream. She smells of gunpowder and cotton candy, her essence floating inside Cain's Venetici. Ageless fragrance inside the vacuum of space. Kiss me, my man. Fret not those notes of the past, for they remain. Am I not more alluring than his twisted memories. I kissed her dark energy lips. Once again, my dark queen has captured my soul. I am hostage unto the subatomic. I am her hostage unto the subatomic level. She loves this. I love this. I love her, my dark mother. End of poem.
Awesome. And I love the little giggle at the end. I think we know that you have the picture through the in-depth life that you've given her over the years. And I have to say, on this particular one, I was a little bit nervous because, hey, I had never thought about being afraid of her because I figure, you know, as long as we're nice to her, David, it's all good. But shoot, if she's big and bad and mean enough for Satan to be one of her playthings that she, you know, brushes off like a mosquito, I just got a little scared of Miss Dark Mother here. And I like that you mentioned her scent there, the gunpowder and cotton candy, which it's funny how you gave her that scent all these years ago and it stuck. And you hear it and you just know it's her. Kiss me, my man. Fret not those notes of the past, for they remain and I'm more alluring than this twisted memory. Just, you're always so clever with this, and you can always, by the time you're done reading a poem that includes the Dark Mother, your joy is showing. And like I said, you could tell that you were smiling and nearly giggling by the end. It's an excellent share. And it's funny how often, it doesn't matter what the subject is, there are so many things that lead you back to her. So many roads that lead to Dark Mother stories. Another impressive share, David. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
let me raconteur. What do you think?
Yeah, this is very interesting. You brought the Dark Mother. You know, I wasn't expecting it at all. And then you gave the factual science about the black hole and what it was called and whatnot. Sorry, I don't remember what you said, but I like the storyline and everything and changing it into a love story. So it was an uplifting and emotional piece. You know, something that could have been cold and technical and you know, hard to write, I think. And you took a beautiful angle on it and changed it into an unexpected love story. So that was nice. I really liked it.
Thank you, Rack. Thank you.
Awesome comment. And my sweet?
The Dark Mother can handle the streets, kick Satan's ass, and then take me out for ice cream. This is why I love her. We get our hair done together. It's all good.
Thank you, sweet.
You're welcome. I love the poetry. Love the storylines.
Thank you.
You know, I can almost picture Sweet and the Dark Mother sitting there chatting it up.
Yeah, I can absolutely picture that.
Just getting my roots done.
That's right.
There you go.
Hunter, are you muted?
Yeah, no, I'm here. I didn't hear you say. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I like to start. I like to start off American Pie. Saw Satan laughing with delight the day the music died. There's another part here where you go, okay, you mentioned space-time. Now, I think you can agree that the definition of dark matter, the problem they're having with dark matter, how it fits into the equation of physics and science and reality as we know it, time has to be a
true solid thing. You can we can touch and feel everything else. We can see where the wind. Mm-hmm. We can know it's there. We don't have to see it. But time and dark and the dark matter are two things you have to create in your mind to understand why we're here and what is the genesis of our existence. The equations are changing, and I think you understand that space-time thing. It's how delicate is it? I thought the warning of the CERN collider, they were trying to replicate the Big Bang to see what happened, what happens, and the other scientists were saying, look, you're messing with the timeline. Space and time. If you tear the fabric of time, who knows what would flip and happen? I mean, how delicate is, how fragile is it? And I'm sorry, I got off a tangent on it. But yeah, you mentioned the timeline. I agree. This is very good. Thank you, Dave. Sorry, I forget.
Awesome good. Comment.
Thanks, Heather.
Yeah, I like talking about the quantum physics and stuff with people. And some people don't. Some people can't.
Okay. Yeah, I know.
David just likes flashing his big brain. Linda, can you comment for David and then read us your poem?
I sure can. David, what an excellent poem. Who said a poem had to be boring? Very intriguing with awesome energy. You totally were in your element. And I got another science lesson from this. This was great. And what a nice surprise to meet the Dark Mother again. It was about time.
Yeah.
I was missing her. So very good, David. Thank you for sharing it.
Oh, thank you for a nice comment, Linda.
You're very welcome.
Awesome comment. And yours, you might have to scroll a little, or I can put it back up a second time if you want.
Let me refresh.
Okay.
Now, I actually have a computer that has a refresh button on it. I don't have to go through all these loops. Anyway, this is the poem I should have read last week that I slept through the show and woke up going, what? But it's called Breathe. In the land of the jungle so long ago, it was luscious and green and the water still flowed. Mothers and babies romped in the grass, then settled down to learn grown-up tasks. First, they would learn about what's good to eat, like apples, bananas, and coconut treats, fresh mango fruit that grows on the trees. All of these things were quite good to eat. Now, one of these moths was called Emerald Champagne, and upon her back carried Blackberry Rain. She was a gorilla who stood brave and tall and carried her baby still naive and small. After the class about what's good to eat, was time to learn about what's on the beat. So mothers taught babies about life in the jungle, but then had to add how men caused a bungle. So Emerald Champagne's baby would mount, then both go and see the awful account. She'd take Baby Rain to the far jungle edge, way up above to watch on the ledge. It looked over the stream where the water was turned, away from the jungle where things are now burned. With a sniff and a snort, both gorillas did sigh, watching the pestilence with tears in their eyes. They dared didn't go past the razor's barbed wire that clawed to the bone but surrounded the fires. As they could smell, all they could smell was burning manure. The earth was on fire without any cure. The dust was so bad that it spoiled their breath. If they stayed too much longer, it could mean their death. Then Baby Rain, with a moan and a gasp, held onto Mother with a very tight grasp. They stood on the ledge and watched the sun set, hoping the beauty would help them forget. oxblood and ruby, tangerine and plum. They stayed and they watched till the setting was done. Then with a thump, Enmal champagne took off with a leap, leaving with rain. It wouldn't be good to stay here too long. If the men see us here, they will do us great wrong. So back to their home where it's still fresh and green, the prettiest jungle that you've ever seen. But not for too long if something's not done, because the men like to burn and make animals run. The moral, if you want to live and breathe, take care of all the jungle trees. Don't let man kill trees in haste, because then our lives will lay in waste. In peace.
Wow. I love the stand. Yeah, I love the stand that you took for them. This is like, I call this soapbox poetry, because you made us feel there was joy and stuff when you talked about mom and baby and their connection, but then the sadness of the stuff going on and what they're seeing and what mothers have to teach the babies about the jungle life. And gosh, hard hitting when you talk about the man like to burn. I mean, you look at that art and this baby holding on and the mom, and it's just, as you always do, you totally bring the art to life in your details, in give it a full story. And then on top of it, like your rhyme, the cadence of it, mothers and babies romped in the grass. They settled down to learn grown-up tasks. And sometimes, even in human life, the babies have to grow up too fast. Sadly, there's stuff you have to show them that, you know, you don't maybe not really want to at this particular time, but it, in their best interest, you do. And then, like, details with the mangoes and just the vivid colors all around. And the fact that by the time you get to the end, you'll hit us with the moral of the story, which is a brilliant touch and one of your trademarks there. If you want to live and breathe, take care of all the jungle trees. Don't let man kill trees in haste, because then our lives will lay in waste. And it's actually, in all honesty, right now, I mean, I realize you're talking about a jungle, but right now it's making me think of all the stuff burning in California right now up by Yosemite, and it's just like so many critters are just lost their home. What was it, like 16,000 acres or something, I think it was. But yeah, amazing detail. Fantastic. Let me get you some comments. Let me go to my pleasure to Raconteur, please.
When you talk about animals, it's usually, you know, brings me to my knees. I love stuff like that. The idea of the gorillas, it makes me think of what was her name, like Jane Goodall, that lived with among the gorillas to see how they taught their young and things like that. I mean, the whole story itself was just very well told and done in rhyme, and it's a great fairy tale with a beautiful message.
Thank you, Rack.
Great comment. And Linda, on a side note, before I get your next comment and before I forget, look in your inbox, because you had originally for this week picked number 10. That's why I had said to you when you picked 14, didn't you like the first one? For some reason, I feel like you'll really love this photo, so I stuck it in your inbox. If it talks to you, great. If it doesn't, you know, stuff happens, but I really wanted to make sure that you saw that part. And Hatter, will you comment for Linda?
And this is just your rights are just should be in a book, all of them. Your cadence is just spot on. You don't, as a reader, you don't have to worry about it, and it's so well done. It colors and gives taste to the poem. I wrote the time clock of extinction, they call it. They had a gorilla with a baby catching on, and he's sitting on the
minute hand to 2 minutes to midnight, and that's midnight is an extinction. It's a sad, sad thing, and you made it, colored it well. You destroy a habitat, somebody's going to die.
Fabulous comment. And David.
Oh, I thought this was really good. I agree with Hatter. Your stuff is so smooth and polished, Linda, that it runs like a Swiss watch inside. It's easy to read. You don't have to, you don't have to go through the Evelyn Woodhead speed reading course to read any of your stuff. You know, it's great. And there's always such a good message behind it, you know. I have to tell you guys a real quick little story here. I used to drive a propane truck, and I made a delivery into this real, real high-end house in Sherwood. And they had a couple of 1,150-gallon underground tanks. And after I got the tanks full, they had a big courtyard. This thing looked like a castle. It had turrets on it all the way around and stuff. I walked inside this courtyard, and there was this brick courtyard there. And there was some worker in there working, and he told me that they had $1 million worth of stonework on this house, just stonework. That's it. You know, nothing. And so I walked inside, and here's this giant, kind of like a glue lamb beam, only it wasn't a glue lamb. It was a great big chunk of a tree, and it made this big archway up there, and he says, look at this thing. He says, this came out of one of the rainforests. Isn't that great? I said, no, it's not great. And he said, what do you mean? I said, you know, we can't go in there into these rainforests and saw down trees for rich people like this. I said, that's not cool. That's
right.
Not cool at all. You know?
Right.
So anyway, I really liked the poem, Linda. It was beautiful. And I liked the way you wrote this and, the meaning that you put to it. It was really, really well done.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic comment, David. And WSP, how about if you comment for Linda for me and then read us your poem? Oh, no, I'll put your recording on after you comment for Linda.
Perfect. All right. No, I think this is a wonderful poem, very polished as everyone else says. There's a stanza in here that makes me go like, oh boy, there's another danger here, right? Because like after they see, you know, the men burning the jungle and cutting it down, you know, they trying to find it again, but it's you know, we go to try and see the beauty in nature to try to forget. And that kind of makes me think a lot of like, you know, how we get like a lot of young activists or just, you know, regular activists, you know, we get bombarded with like a lot of horrific images that we have to think to ourselves like, oh, okay, I need to go, you know, look at something cute. I need to not think about this. And then kind of forget about it, you know? And so for me, it's like, oh, that's a real danger, you know, being tired from all these things. And we have to try and find, you know, nature to make us feel better. So I thought that was an interesting point to throw in here. And, my quick question, I guess, because I was busy looking it up, the name Emerald Champagne and Blackberry Rain, was that where did those names come from? Was it, you know, a reference to something, or is it kind of like Jungle Book?
Yeah, well,
It
was Word Bank, and those just jumped out at me because the colors of them, and it just was kind of jungly colors it's just what I felt.
Oh, no, very cool. No, because like Blackberry Rain made me think of the Blackberry phone that we have up here in Canada. And then the Emerald Champagne made me think of the champagne, there's a specific mark, you know, champagne flutes that I think are also called Emerald Champagne. So that's why I was like, There's probably like a corporation thing in here that she's trying to reference that I just can't put my finger on it, you know. But no, super cool.
Right. No,
thank you for sharing. I love the poem.
Out of my brain. Thank you, sweetheart.
Awesome comment. And if you guys click on his poem, he made us a recording, and I shall push play.
Sketching prior to Apollo 11 launch. Written by WSP. Read by WSP. Doing a poor impression. Sorry, everyone. Creased brows, flared nostrils, vigorous graphite movement. History wasn't the only thing in the works. Steamy, 86 degrees, light breeze, perfect weather. Tally, fly on the wall, was seated on tall grass. His subjects, cool cucumbers, were eating breakfast. Fresh, juicy peaches, macadamia nuts, all part of the picnic near the blacktop launch pad. The stars never seemed closer at Cape Canaveral. As the picnic wraps up, the countdown draws nearer. Charlie skedaddles, passing through high-tech archways, documenting explorers donning their gear that shields from the cold like master-crafted blubber. Rough outlines and traces are enough for limbs. More time was spent studying the heroes' faces, their looks, glances, and grins sketched efficiently. Paul Kelly knew that is what was most important. Aldrin, Armstrong, and Collins, 1969. Reflections of Hope and Science Immortalized. End of reading and impression.
You know, I kind of love where this took you. I wasn't sure. I really, for some reason, I thought that it might be a little, and that you might say, you know, do you mind if I take this back? But I'm glad you didn't. Your details and stuff were really cool. Like his subjects, cool cucumbers, we're eating breakfast. Fresh, juicy peaches, macadamia nuts, all part of the picnic near the blacktop launch pad. The stars never seemed closer to Cape Canaveral. Just the visuals there and the thought of them sitting there snacking and the launch, the details are really incredible. And the rough outlines and traces are enough for the limbs. More time was spent studying the heroes' faces, their looks, glances, and grins sketched efficiently. Paul Kale knew that it was most important. Aldrin, Armstrong, and Collins, 1969, Reflections of Hope and Science Immortalized. I love the closing couplet because it's like, you know, it gives you historical detail, but I love the last two words, especially Science Immortalized. But sketching prior to Apollo 11 launch, really cool title, and steamy 86 degrees, light breezes, perfect weather. I think that you touched on all the senses and brought this to life, and I should have added the art to the wall before I deleted the topic board, but I think that you turned around and you gave such an amazing history to the art and gave us a lot of details of the launch and maybe what was going on or the stuff around them. So I think that you did a fantastic job on this. And I know I said it when you first called, but I'm really glad you're back. Let me get you some comments. Well, because of the space thing, I think I'm going to go directly to David for, oh, I think we lost him. Let me let him back in. Hi. WSB?
Oh, no, it cut out halfway through, but I was able to cut back in. For some reason, my call dropped after the first line, but then came right back into the second stanza, so I didn't miss much.
Oh, okay. So you got to hear my comment?
Oh, yeah, totally. I got to hear the whole thing. It was great.
Cool. Okay, cool.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. And let me get you some words from David, please.
Well, I really like this. The descriptions are great in this, you know. You know, 86 degrees, light breeze, perfect weather. Callie, fly on the wall, was seated on soft grass. The subject's cool cucumber, eating breakfast, fresh juicy peaches, macadamia nuts. The descriptions in this are really, really good. I'm glad you wrote this because America needs to be reminded of how fantastic NASA and our sciences have been And, you know, now we've mixed them with the European Space Agency and even China. And so, you know, I wish we could just put all of our differences aside and concentrate on science and the betterment of mankind instead of all this other monkey business. But, you know, this was really, really good. I really liked it. You know, it's this sort of stuff's right down my alley anyway. I love space. I'm an amateur astronomer. And so anything that's written this way really gets my attention. I thought this was really well done, well thought out. And I can tell you put some effort into it. So, you know, congratulations on an outstanding piece.
If I may, the 86 degrees that people are loving, that's actually not even from me. I got it because I was looking up in interviews about the day to try to help set the piece, and I was looking at an interview of a meteorologist talking about the weather, and he was like, steamy 86 degrees, cumulus clouds up in the distance, perfect weather. And I was like, oh, shit, all right, this is where I have to go with. So, like, oh, everyone's favorite part, and it's not even my words.
Sure.
Even...
Well, that's okay. That's cool. You know, it's good. It's a good poem. Yeah, it really is.
And the thing about that is, okay, you used a quote, but you blended your words with them so perfectly that it doesn't look like it shouldn't be there or that it wasn't part of your own thought. So I think you did a stellar job. Linda, comment, please.
Yeah, I thought that was an excellent recital for this history-filled poem. You did a really fabulous job reading that, WSP. You have woven a simple tapestry with your words, one that shows the emotions of the astronaut. I thought that was really cool how you described, let me find it. Well, I like this part. His subjects, cool cucumbers, were eating breakfast, fresh juicy peaches, macadamia nuts, all part of this picnic near the blacktop launch pad that stars never seem so closer at Cape Canaveral. It shows that if I was an astronaut and I was getting ready to go into space, I don't think sitting having a picnic would be what I would be doing. I would be running to the toilet, vomiting, and being afraid. But this shows how they're taught and they learn to be cool and under control at a time where most people would be so nervous. But I like the way you wrote this. It had a lot of really good points in it. But, thank you for sharing it very much.
Awesome comment. And let me get one more from Reckontor.
Yeah, Linda, if you were an astronaut, you wouldn't be on the blacktop. That they're observing the launch from the blacktop, having the picnic. This took me back from you know when they used to have the space launches. I don't remember. I know I was younger. I had relatives that lived in Florida, and when we would go down, and they would watch them on TV, and it was something, you know, as a kid I wouldn't have been as interested in, but you know the older people, you know, kind of teaching, you know, putting on that scholarly cap and passing on knowledge, you know, made it very interesting to watch, you know, the rocket launch. It's really kind of amazing, and you know, you brought me back to that because, you know, it was an occasion to go out to visit them, and that, you know, that almost overshadowed whatever we did, you know. And I couldn't really tell you most of the time what we did, but the space launches I remember very vividly. And, you know, the picnic and the breakfast and everything, I think, were a lovely touch. And mentioning them by name and using the actual weather report from the day, that was very clever. You know, I love little details like that when you're actually cognizant enough to look up, you know, that kind of detail and include it in a poem. I mean, I hope you got that in the author's notes that, you know, that was factual from the actual launch that you're talking about. That was really cool.
Awesome comment. Thank you very much. And the next poem on the board is by Poetic Picasso. Thank you, Frank. If you guys click on his link, I will push play.
Within the carpets of blackberries in sleeping willows lie is a scarlet rose with a drop of a martineau dew from the petrichor, a somber token of a lonesome flower forsaken in the fold, whose petals are slowly wilting in the bitter rum of despair. The rays of the sun face in the dreary shade of a hollow regret of thorns, of the darkness of yesterday, sounding the threnody of crickets, fades into the sober shuttle of the face of phantoms of the past. The drops of dew drip into puddles by the whirligigs of the meadows, as I am flabbergasted by the shriveling blooms longing with a thirst. The westerly wind soon caress the mournful rose with an embrace, and its gentle petals are imbued by the moisture of a fresh new day. She dreams in color, she dreams in red, she dreams of happiness, she dreamed of hope. I am the soothing rain washing away her tears. I am the soothing rain washing away her tears.
Wow. Within the carpets of blackberries and sleeping willows nigh is a scarlet rose with a drop of matinee dew from the petrichor. I like that. Somber token of lonesome flower forsaken in the fold. I'm trying to find the art on the board. It's a close-up of a red flower with one drop of dew. So I like the way he put that with the dew from the petrichor. And then there was something in the tone of his voice, I think, where it says, fades into the sober shadow of the face of phantoms of the past. There's something so, I love that couplet. I don't know what it is about it. As I am flabbergasted by the shriveling blooms longing with a thirst. I love the use of the flabbergasted, which was one of his silly words. She dreams in color, she dreams in red, is his quote from the song. I think he used it brilliantly in there. And I am the soothing rain washing away her tears. I love the way it ends. It's like the happy ending because he's washing away her tears. So I think that this came out really beautiful in word, even in that music that was in the background. It all added to the feeling of the poem. So another brilliant share. Thank you very much, Frank. Appreciate it. And I am going to see what Beck and Joy thought.
Yeah, this had a lovely tone to it. You know, it was a Frank production. you know, the way that you read it set a beautiful mood. The language that you used was consistent throughout. You know, I hate when sometimes, you know, you get a weird word or whatever and you almost, I don't know, you kind of throw it in and it doesn't seem to fit. Everything was seamless, so I couldn't pick out what was word bank. The only thing I caught was the song title because, you know, that's kind of a classic line. But, I mean, it was a beautiful piece and I enjoyed it. And the ending was brilliant, like Deb said, you know, the raindrops washing away. The tears. That's a lovely thought. That's really beautiful. Making this an overall beautiful piece.
Fabulous comment. And Linda, please.
Yeah, well, Frank is such a prolific writer. He gets into his piece and brings it to life. And listening to him read is just a wonderful experience. But I thought that this was absolutely beautiful. The imagery was hauntingly lovely. And it was so enchanting and mesmerizing. So I think Frank did an excellent job writing this. Thank you, Frank. Thank you for sharing.
Awesome comment. And David?
Yeah, I have to agree with what Linda said about this poem. It has a magical storytelling quality to it, I think, at least for me it does. Boy, there's so many good words and lines in this poem. I don't know where to start on it. I can see that it would be a kind of a challenge to write to this. I couldn't have done it nearly as well, but I like this line, these two lines here. This couplet that says fades into sober shadow of the face of phantoms of the past. I think Deborah, you said you like that, those two lines as well. I sure do. There's something kind of haunting about the face of phantoms of the past that, you know, we think about things, people in the past and things that happened in the past, and they take on the face of a phantom, more or less. You know, I thought that was very well read. This was a beautiful poem. I liked it. And, of course, like Linda said, you know, the way Frank reads, that's 50% of the poem right there. So well done, my friend Frank.
Very true. Great comment. And WSP?
Oh, yeah. It's a wonderful poem. I think my favorite couplets, you know, like they're all great, but if I had to pick one, I'd say I really like the effacing the dreary shade, a hollow regret of thorns. It's like the regret of thorns is, you know, it gets the juices flowing, and you know, hollow. You know, it's, and I'm like, oh yeah, wait a minute. I think thorns are hollow too, so there's a double meaning. So to me, it was a lot of fun, a lot of packed information and feelings in, you know, in the tight couplet. And in like a grand scheme of things, for me, this poem. Well, as I wrote in the comments, like I can imagine the color red and black a lot through when going through this poem, which I think is kind of a really fun feeling that, you know, you feel colors instead. But also upon hearing it again, it kind of makes me think of Beauty and the Beast. You know, the rose that's in the that's preserved in the glass, and the petals are kind of falling a little bit. Kind of makes me think of that rose, but in a meadow or in a garden, with all the imagery and symbolism behind it. So I think this is a very powerful poem that can be interpreted in many ways, and makes it very exciting, I'd say, for readers. Great work.
Awesome comment. Thank you so much, everyone, and thank you again, Frank. And if you guys would click on the poem by Heavenly Angel, I'll read for her. I love this photo that she got. It's called The Queen of Love by Heavenly Angel. And here we go. She reigns in her court, flooding the atmosphere with love's caressing balm and the sweet perfume of ambrosia. She is the ray of hope that waits for everyone beyond the rainbow, spreading across a huckleberry sky where splashes of sunflower grow and the grass stays green. She's the queen of love, love that flows sweeter than maple syrup, the queen of hearts that is portrayed in legends and lore. Yet there's nothing cutesy-poo about the realm in which she reigns. The kingdom is built upon hearts joined in love as intense as the smoky breath of many dragons filling the air with plumes of cherry red emotion. Rock on, ancient queen. Follow those who pale in your shadow, those flibber giblets who are naysayers, to believe in your powers of love and fulfillment. Reign forever in glorious majesty. Majesty and poem. Wow. I like the way she used her silly words. The flipper gibbets at the end there, and I think cutesy poo was her other one. There was something not on Angel's part, but on my part, there was something so wrong with giving her a word like cutesy poo to put in there with this beautiful poem filled with descriptions of love. And like the huckleberry sky where splashes of sunflowers grow and the grass stays green. It's just tranquil and beautiful and filled with expressions of love and great details. And reign forever in glorious majesty. It is a great way to end. And the queen of love, I like that she made her a queen. And she pulled the bold colors from the art, blended them in to the words with the perfume of sweet ambrosia, and it was just a perfect little gem. And as always, it's an honor to be her reader. And Angel, thank you for writing and sending in the poem. I appreciate it very much. Beautiful job. Let me get you some comments. Let me go right to Linda this time.
Oh, you know, this was so beautiful. Angel just always has such an angelic way of writing. I thought it had a bold entrance leading into an enchanting heart and soul of the poem. The imagery was intense, and I as well love the Queen of Hearts, the Red Queen, being in this as the main character. One of my favorite books is the Alice in Wonderland series, and I love that reference to her. But she wrote this with a lot of love, and I mean, just beautiful, beautiful verses. She is the ray of hope that waits for everyone beyond the rainbow, spreading across a huckleberry sky where splashes of sunflowers grow and the grass stays green. That just makes me feel so relaxed. And you know, when you read something that gives you an emotion, that is the point of writing. And I love what this brought out in me. So, Heavenly Angel, you have created a beautiful poem. Thank you for sharing it.
Fabulous comment. Reckontor?
Yeah, you know, you keep writing like this, Angel, you're going to get all kinds of creeps in your inbox coming after you. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. You know, love is that emotion that we're always chasing after. And you know, it's revered in a lot of ways. And you capture, you know, all the high points of it. You know, thinking of someone like your queen is a beautiful thought that wraps itself up inside of that thought as well. Your use of, you know, language and the nonsense words and everything were great. I can't read the last word. Was it flibberty gibbet? Because that might be a different word. The way you're pronouncing it, it might be a different word than I'm thinking. But flibberty gibbet, I've heard.
Looking. Oh.
Say it again.
Yeah, I'm going to have to spell it. It's F-I-B-B-E-R. F-I-B-B-E-R. T-I-G-B-B-E-T-S. Fibbertigibbets. It's a tough one.
Oh, there's no L after that F?
Liberty gibbets.
No. She's spelling it different. That's why I'm confused. That's not flibberty gibbet. It's a different word entirely. It's a different word entirely. Okay. Thank you, Deb.
Okay.
I can't see, guys. That's why I'm calling her out on it.
No. I probably did say it wrong. I'm glad you clarified there. But yeah,
Flibberty gibbet has that L in it that WSP is talking about. That it, and it's a legitimate word. You're calling it a nonsense word, but you could look that up. I believe flibbertyjibbert. I believe is how it's spelled, but it's a legitimate word. Which is why I was confused, because you're saying flibberty, which is a variant of flibberty apparently, but it's not the same word. So you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right in your pronunciation. There's no L. It's a different word entirely.
And I did provide a definition for each of the silly words. And the definition that came with this one is the word is so odd that it may sound fake, but it refers to a silly and talkative person. That was the definition that came with it. But yeah, let me see. Patty, are you back?
Who are
you? Okay. Did I let everybody else comment?
I think I did.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me mute Hatter because I don't think he knows we can hear him. Oops, that's David. Wait a minute. Sorry, David. I hit the wrong button. Open David back up. Okay, now I have three poems left, but before we do those, Raconteur, did you find one that you memorized that you want to share, or do you have a recording, or what do you want to do?
The one that I memorized, I don't know that you've heard. It's called Fractured Fairy Tale.
Fractured? Okay, let me get that first.
It's, I think, the second to last one that I published.
Okay. And while I'm getting that for you, I will tell everyone that tomorrow night is Sweet Peas night, and her topic is falling off your soapbox and putting your foot in your mouth. So to me, that's sort of like the person who tells you to conserve water and then uses a sprinkler to water their lawn during a drought. That would be really falling off your soapbox and putting your foot in it. But I'm sure that everybody can have a ton of fun with this one. So I'm looking forward to that. And that's tomorrow night at 10 p.m. And Fractured fairy tale. I've got it, and I'm on my way to the chat wall with it. And here we go. Okay, so it is on the board. So Rock and Tour, show us what you got.
All right, I'm doing this from memory, so I'll probably be off by a word or two, but hopefully the intent will still be there. It's a fractured fairy tale. Once upon a time, over half a century passed, I began chasing my destiny. Began chasing my destiny as clear skies inexorably turned overcast. There are no sweet dreams for diabetics, nor is there love at first sight for the blind. Life isn't simply unfair, it's outright cruel and unkind. My eyes have been denied the beauty of all that surrounds me. So I stumble and I fall, navigating a world that confounds me. When searching for fairy tales in the dark, the only thing I manage to find is a steaming pile of crappily ever after some unicorn left behind.
Okay. First, what a memory. There was one section in the third stanza that you changed just a little bit. Other than that, it was like word for word. So bravo on that. And I like the way you took this from that title, Fractured Fairy Tale. Once upon a time, over half a century past, I began chasing my destiny as clear skies inexorably turned overcast. And then you told us how, or explained what you meant by how it turned, with the one line, one of those lines people would be jealous of: there are no sweet dreams for diabetics. Wow, what a mind-blowing line. My eyes have been denied the beauty of all that surrounds me. It broke my heart, which is our pull for something from your hurt locker, that's for sure. You're already full of emotion, and then you take us to your last stanza. When searching for fairy tales in the dark, the only thing I managed to find is a steaming pile of crappily ever after some unicorn left behind. I mean, to take the sad thought but put it in the words that you do so that we could sort of almost laugh at it, it is pretty brilliant. And again, it bears repeating to say that I'm very impressed that you memorized that and was able to read it for us. So I'm thrilled that you brought this. I'm thrilled that you have been hanging out. And I hope you keep doing so. Great share.
Thanks, Debs.
Linda, what do you think? Oh, it looks like she had a drop. Sorry about that. Okay, David, please.
Oh, I thought this was really good. I like the whole storyline in it. I'm diabetic myself, and it's messing with my eyesight a little bit. So this kind of hits me dead center pretty much. I thought it was interesting, especially towards the ending there. I like the steaming pile of crappily ever after. That was cool. it's a really nice, and I don't know what else to say about it. It's beautiful. I like the way you wrote it. You know, it's good. It's a good poem.
Thanks, Dave.
Awesome comment.
Welcome.
And WSP?
Yeah, no, the poem does have like a very melancholic, you know, feel to it, but man, the your sense of humor really just pushes through, right? Because there's the sweet dreams for diabetics, but I also really like there's no love at first sight for the blind, and that made me go like, huh, oh yeah, you know. So it's kind of like a lot of like, you know, these kinds of things, you know, where it's like, man, that is pretty tragic, but at the same time, what a funny twist and thought, you know. So I really appreciate the sense of humor that shines through this poem. Yeah, you know, great work, great job.
Thanks.
Awesome. And Hatter, are you back? So I just wanted to make sure and double check over here. Okay. Oh, well, look at me. I am here with just other men. How fun is that? So.
You love it, Deborah. I know you do.
I do, I do. So, David, there is a poem on the board by CRL17. Would you mind reading that for me?
Oh, I sure will. Let's see. Let me refresh here. Okay. It's called Sunset Friends. Okay.
Yes,
yeah.
Sir.
Yeah. What a cool picture. In the land of coconut trees and sunsets that paint the cotton skies, I sit here on the edge of Snickersnee Bay, catching the rays with two friends of mine. Mahogany-colored butterflies float on the breeze, landing softly on the wintergreen trees. I can't believe I blew that. Pachyderm Pete said words I can't repeat. It was all just gobbledygook. And Sammy the squirrel had some views of the world that were totally off the hook. We meet here on the bay most every day to watch the setting sun. Just watch as the day melts away. This is what I call fun. Cool. That was a neat poem. I liked it. It was fun to read, too.
It was
well
a great
done.
Read. Thank you so much, David. It was a great read. And yeah, I like his title and the art. I wondered what he would do with it. In the land of coconut trees and sunset that paint the cotton skies, I sit on the edge of Snickersnee Bay. I love that he used this word to name the bay. And then the colors, excuse me, the pachyderm Pete said the words I repeat. And it was all gobbledygook. So he really made his silly words fun, and he managed to put a whole story together with just what, like one, two, three, four, five, like a dozen lines. But he did an awesome job with it. And I wondered, because not everybody could get into that picture, but there's just something so cute about that elephant sitting on the tree looking at the sun. And it was just a really whimsical piece of art, and he added perfect whimsical wording to take us on the journey with the art. So I am very impressed, and I'm really glad that he participated in the show. Awesome job. And again, I see a great read. David, will you comment for him as well?
Oh, yeah, this was really a fun read. I enjoyed reading it. It made me laugh and giggle a little bit. You know, and I agree with what you said about it, Deb. Few lines here, but he wove it into such a nice story, you know, and it's one of these feel-good poems that you read, and it makes you feel good afterwards. And, boy, we sure need that in America these days, or the whole world. Anyway, I really like this poem. I thought it was outstanding, and I'm glad I got a chance to read it. Well done.
Awesome comment, and thank you again for reading. And Raconteur, what did you think?
Yeah, I think it was funny that Dave stumbled over the words he can't repeat. that was just ironic. not that you don't know the word pachyderm, because you clearly repeated it afterwards, but I just thought, you know, you stumbled at that point just by coincidence.
Yeah.
That just made it even that much funnier. That made it, but you know, it was an excellent read, and you know, it is a little nonsensical, but he tied it together in a way that made sense. So, you know, I love when people do that, you know, because sometimes when you try to describe going from A to B, people look at you like you got three heads. But then when you go down to the detail and you explain it like he did, you know, he's got the coconut trees and everything, you could follow along. You're like, you know, duh. You know, it's like, well, why didn't I see that before? I love those kind of light bulb moments. happens when you can tell a story like that, that it makes total sense. It's like, how do you get there? You know, I don't understand. And then, you know, just a little bit of detail, and then, well, there it is. He did a good job with it. I enjoyed it.
Now, let me see here. WSP, did I let you comment? I don't remember. I'm sorry.
No, not yet.
Will you please?
Oh, for sure. Just in case you're going to say, well, too bad, next poem, you know, but... no, I really like this poem as well. The feeling that I got, you know, like trying to stray away from the picture, is it really made me think back to, like, you know, the easier days, you know, when you just kind of hang out with the with a childhood friend, even though if you don't really have much to do or much to say, it's just kind of good, you know, hang around and, you know, you go back home. It's like, that was a good evening. I had fun, even though if we didn't really do much. Kind of made me think about that a lot. Like, the kind of feeling that you get from those kinds of hangouts and experiences, I feel like that was what resonating from the poem as well, outside of the narrative that was accompanying the picture. So I thought this was a very good feel-good poem. So thank you for sharing. I was glad to experience it.
What do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do?
Yeah, pretty much. Right? And it's like, all right, can I hang out? And that's about it.
All right. We have two left, you guys. The next one is a recording that was sent in by Phil the Poet. So if you click on his link, I will push play.
This is a poem by Phil the Poet called The Phoenix's Fiery Nest. Taking the road to nowhere, the soles of my feet begin to burn. My conscience pricks me as it whispers that I must return. Deep under the asphalt is the Phoenix's fiery nest, steam rising from the sockets of Earth's breathing breast. Charred leaves of a gardenia lie like ornaments upon the abandoned decaying concrete of tenements. The scent of coffee mingle with citrus and manure. Faint aroma of pumpkin pie reminds me of something pure. The word doozy is graffitied on a sign over the city's name, but it all means nothing when the world becomes aflame. There we hold our breath when the phoenix arises, when its wings melt away of vanilla and almond disguises. The heat becomes intense as the ground rumbles, while the temperature rises and the earth stumbles. People running about screaming, falling in the grit. A voice with a sarcastic tone cries out, lickety-split. Suddenly, I'm standing in a place where I've never been before. Something leads me straight to an old familiar door. I reach out to grab the handle, but it crumbles to dust, not realizing the hot breath of the phoenix's final touch. End poem.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you take a look at the chat wall, I did just add the photo that Phil wrote to, just to see how he just totally brought that art to life. Taking the road to nowhere. It seems perfect. The soles of my feet begin to burn. My conscience pricks me with it as it whispers that I must return. Deep under the asphalt is the phoenix's fiery nest, steam rising from the sockets of earth, breathing breast. I'm like, wow. The heat becomes intense and the ground rumbles while the temperature rises and the earth stumbles. I mean, the wording is perfect. He pulled that flaming road to nowhere out of there and nailed the prompt. As usual, he did a brilliant job. And I there's something in his pronunciations. It's always such a joy to listen to him read it. I know I've said this probably ad nauseum, but I am I have never been as happy as when he started to send in the recordings rather than having us read. And don't get me wrong, because I'll take the poems any way I can get them so that I can help everybody get their poetry out there on the air. But it's so much more of a journey when you get to hear the poet themselves read and feel what they were trying to get you to feel as they read. And he totally lit up, pun intended, this art. Brilliant job, Phil. Thank you so much. Let me go to Raconteur, please.
I love his poems, you know, especially when he does the recordings, like you said. I can't help but want to, you know, that first line that he says at the beginning of every poem, I can't help but want to just repeat it. This was a poem by Phil the Poet. I love when he does the way he does
yeah,
it, you know. He does, his enunciation is classic. I don't know, you know, exactly what accent he has, or, you know, well, I guess to him it's not an accent, it's just speech, but I love listening to it. It adds a classical touch to his writing, and that this poem itself was just gorgeous. You know, the phoenix and the flames and burning his souls, and there was a line towards the, like, two-thirds of the way through that he mentioned about the world breathing. I just really enjoyed it. I love Phil. This was fantastic.
Awesome comment. And WSP?
Yeah, a lot of great lines in here. I really like the charred leaves of a gardenia lie like ornaments upon the abandoned, decaying concrete of tenements. There's just something so visual and about it that's striking, and I loved it. And something else that I really like about this poem, or at least got me thinking, is, you know, the narrator is trying to run away, and everything's burning, finds a real danger, real fear that emanates from this poem. But it's interesting that it's a phoenix, right? So it's like rebirth. So there's a lot of things, like, you know, rebirth means there's life-changing things coming on. Going to be a new you, and those kinds of changes are really scary to handle. And we see, like, in the last stanza, you know, something leads me straight to an old familiar door. That was making me think, like, when you're afraid of to embrace new changes, you know, you always try to run back to something you're familiar with. So there's kind of like this underlining theme going on in here that I thought was very interesting, you know, amidst, you know, the burning fires across the whole poem. So very good job, very thought-provoking, I would say.
Awesome comment. And David, I have one poem left. I saved it for last just in case Wayne Gent called, but he didn't. So if you wouldn't mind, I would like you to comment for Phil and then read for Wayne.
I really like Phil's writing, too. He's really good. I love the way he reads. You know, I too like that last part of that poem. Let's see. Well, hold on a second. Yeah, where he reaches for the door. That kind of had me wonder what was going to happen, and then he hands me an eight ball here, and it says, I reach out to grab the handle, but it crumbles to dust, not realizing the hot breath of the phoenix final touch. I was, you know, I didn't know where to go after that one. But that's good. I mean, it leaves you sort of a cliffhanger ending for me, and I thought that was really well done. He did describe the prompt to a T. Excellent job. Really cool. So, okay, then you want me to read Wayne's poem?
Yes, please.
Okay. This is called Eagle with the Bird Flu by Wayne Gent. This should be good. Easy, boy, easy, my broken, beauteous bird. Single him out from the ginger herd. Nutmeg, eyeball, and licorice legs make him unstable. Two shots of apple whiskey sit on the table. Radio announces swamp under attack, then silence. Beveled, biting bird sits coconut tea for balance. No time to be wishy-washy if needed to fight. Can't go until his collie wobbles have gotten right. Hold on, hold on upon me, because I'm a little unsteady. We go not to war until he's ready. On the ridge, rocky ledge, I treat my pal. Looks like we'll be here for a while. Nothing worse than going to battle late, but this time victory will have to wait. Not battling bird. Now that battling bird has drank, been fed, guess I'll try to get the bird to go to bed. that was cool. Fun poem.
You know, you can always count on Wayne and his wit to get a giggle before the end of a show. And you did an excellent job reading. It's just that sometimes, you know what was missing? At the end, he goes, "And?" But it's like, it's that thing where, you know, other people can read excellently for you, but it's just a little different when it's not the poet themselves. And I love the way he used the word bank. Easy, boy, easy. My broken, beauteous bird singled him out from the ginger herd. Nutmeg eyeball and licorice legs make him unstable. Two shots of apple whiskey sit on the table. I don't know if it was the nutmeg and the licorice that made him unstable, or maybe it was that apple whiskey after all. So I thought that was fun, right? And at the end there, nothing worse than going to battle late, but the time victory will have to wait. Now the battling bird has drank, been fed. Guess I'll get the bird to go to bed. He's funny, and he has fun with these, and you can tell when you read his work or when you hear him read his work that he had a blast. And he has become so amazing at these word banks. And I mean, I put up if I put up 100, sometimes he uses all 100 and they make sense. So go figure that.
Yeah.
But I thought he didn't. Yeah, right. I thought he did an excellent job with this, and I appreciate it, but we missed him very much. And David, you did a fabulous read. Will you comment for him?
Yeah, Wayne's stuff is always fun. I love reading his work. You can always call on me to read any of Wayne's stuff because I love it. He and I are good friends, too. He is, like you said, Deborah, he is a master of word utilization. He can spin an entire poem out of the word bank, you know, and it makes sense. It's not gibberish, you know. I enjoyed reading this. It was funny. I knew it was going to be because Wayne's sense of humor always, infiltrates his work, which is cool. I would say that I think that the reason the bird's unstable is because of the two shots of apple whiskey. Wow. This was a fun read. I enjoyed reading it. Some of Wayne's stuff gets to be borders on the edge of being tongue twisters, and this one sort of got to be that way in one of the stanzas a little bit. But anyway, it was still fun to read. It wasn't difficult. And I think he did a great job with the prompt, too.
I agree.
Well done.
And thank you again. Thank you again for reading. WSP?
No, it's a great poem. Love the word associations that it does, much like we were saying. You know, can use up the whole word bank and still make it make sense. So it's a treat to read and see how like the Sudoku figures itself out, you know. I really liked the beveled biting bird sips coconut tea for balance. No time to be wishy-washy if needed to fight. Because I was kind of stumbling into the tongue twistery elements, you know, and it's so fun to say out loud. So I just for the experience of saying something out loud, those were really fun lines to get through. I also really like that the eagles, you know, like in these kinds of movies or fantasy movies, because the picture made me think of Lord of the Rings, you know, they're often like big, relatively scary or noble creatures, but this makes them look kind of cute, you know, and it's kind of fun. You know, I thought that was kind of sweet that we were able to make like a giant flying eagle. So that's kind of cute and ready to go to bed after, you know, being fed. So great work all around. I really appreciate it.
Awesome comment. Thank you. And the last comment of the night goes to Raconteur.
All right, Wayne. I'm gonna my love of double entendres. I'm gonna put a twist on this poem, and point out that in England a bird is a woman. So that gives this poem a whole new meaning if you read it thinking of woman instead of bird with feathers. I thought it was brilliant. I mean, it makes sense with the bird is a bird because you told the story and lovely alliteration, but it also makes sense if you're talking about a woman. So brilliant, 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 Wayne.
Oh, the compound on that. For some reason, when I first read the poem, like, you know, on my own, I kept reading the first line as easy, easy boy, easy, my broken bodacious bird. So I was like, uh-oh, you know, we're compounding here.
Well, amazing comments, you guys. Thank you very much. Appreciate you all. By the end of these shows, I'm always so amazed at the level of brilliance from all the poets and the variety and the way you people nail these prompts week after week. I'm thrilled. And I want to thank my board, which is Jay Hatter and Sweet Pea and AP Taylor, for helping me run these shows. And I want to say thank you to Raconteur for hanging out all night and even beating me to the studio, and to David for hanging out all night, and WSP, I'm so glad you're back and that you called to hang out with us and stayed all night. And I want to say thank you to Kay and Steven and Bill and Angel and Frank and Wayne and CRL and my lovely Linda. I appreciate you all very much, and sharing your creativity is a privilege week after week that I don't take lightly. I appreciate you more than any of you realize. None of these shows would be anything without all of you, and we all do realize that. And on that note, I am about to put on the board the link for my show next week, so you can take a peek at that and pick out your prompt. And a reminder to join Sweet Pea tomorrow. Falling off those soapboxes, what you put in your mouth, ought to be a really fun show. It's always a fun time when we hang out with Sweet Pea. So I will see you gentlemen then. Love and respect to you all. And we will go out the same way we came in, with the beautiful song written by Jay Hatter, and the singer and writer of the music is Shout Even Shy. So, here we go. Love and respect.
See you, Dan.
Take care, everyone.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant, and I say.
I believe it was forever, but just a moment of your time, I cannot say, 'cause I want to. Are you telling me?
Love and respect. Good night.